Make a safe space to think big. Bonus material to kick off the year. Bonus material zum Jahresauftakt. Heute alles auf Englisch. In this episode, colleagues from Kessels and Smith have their say. Because our Christmas party was designed in the form of a radio show where we could celebrate the end of the year together in parallel offerings, we, this is Marc Dechmann, Tina Gado and Roberto Isberna, offered a special podcast episode, live with the colleagues. And the same question, what is actually pending now? In a slightly different format, instead of one guest and two hosts, this time it was two guests, three hosts and four listeners. All of us colleagues from Kessels and Smith, the learning company. Consultants and facilitators from Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands and South Africa. Our guests, Paul Kirsten, South Africa, and Chris Snick, Belgium. Pepijn, Suzanne, Erik and Ilan listened and were part of our generative talk after the two interviews. We hit the wall, have to ask ourselves, does it make sense anymore? It's about the meaning of communities and at the same time how to deal with the paradox between the very close and the big picture. It is about belonging and courage.
Das neue Normal. Was steht jetzt eigentlich an? Unser Digital Unplugged Podcast Staffel 2 mit Marc Dechmann, Roberto Isberna und Tina Gado. Die letzten Monate haben die Welt, Europa, Deutschland, unser Alltagsempfinden mehr verändert als die gesamten letzten 6 Jahre. Warum ist das so? Und vor allem, wo kann uns das hinführen? Wo soll uns das hinführen? Und was brauchen wir dafür?
So, welcome to the special edition of our podcast series, Das neue Normal, was steht jetzt eigentlich an? Or let's translate it into English, and that's not that easy. We have different options. We have called it the new normal, what is actually pending now? Our podcast journey started in March with Marc Dechmann and Roberto Isberna, about the question what a new collaboration could look like after Corona. It was a quite spontaneous podcast series. And then Marc and Roberto gathered 17 guests, all the guests of our podcast, in Berlin in summer. And the next question emerged in that group when we asked, what do you would like to listen to in the next episodes of this podcast? And the question that was seen most urgently by all was this one. Was steht jetzt eigentlich an? So what's next? What are we really up to now? And we was really meaning we as societies, we as people, we in our communities. And then started the second season hosted by Marc, Roberto and myself. And today we would like to add to our expedition perspectives from different societies. And I'm happy to welcome you, Paul, and you, Chris. And you both bring each other two perspectives. Paul living in South Africa for quite a long time now, but also knowing and living in the Netherlands, knowing well that society. And Chris, you are from Brussels and from Belgium, but now hopping on and off in Berlin and in Brussels. So you have this different perspectives from Germany bringing in. Let me tell you just very quickly why this question, what is going on now, what is pending now, so important to us. Over the past few months, we have felt some shifts to what we previously understood to be common sense. Corona as a burning glass creates a new look at phenomena we have learned to live with in the past. The consequences of globalization felt on our everyday lives. The bleeding of inner cities and retail, we have seen that for quite a long time already. Now it's really there. The fact that culture is the first thing to be cut in a crisis. The question of what is systematically relevant and the answers that are found to it. Dealing with illness and death in our societies. Solidarity and the exclusions that come with it. The public handling of tensions and opposition. The role of media in all of this. And the feeling that the state of emergency is becoming kind of new normal. The observation of an inner, well, that's just what it is now. And we ask you, Paul and Chris, today, what's on the agenda now? What dynamics do you perceive in your societies and what is over and what wants to come into life? The flow will be the following. We have two interviews, about 15 minutes, one by one. So first Marc is interviewing Paul and then Roberto is interviewing Chris in a mix of English and German. And while they're doing this, all the others, we others, are just listening to them. And after the 15 minutes, Chris and I will do a little resonance of 1 minute to what we have heard Paul was saying. And then the same with Chris and Roberto. And the others, Suess, Eric, and Pepijn, you're invited to also listen, to maybe use the chat when you have something that pops up and comes to your mind. And after the two times 15 minutes of an interview, we have a generative talk. So we put these perspectives together, and then you are also invited to build on these ideas we have hopefully deliberated and we have thought of. And let's just then see what is coming out of this conversation.
Tina, thanks for dancing us into this podcast. And Paul, I would like to invite you to join the conversation. And I have the following question, Paul. When you remember the first time in your life that you felt that you had a more impactful relation to the bigger whole, to society or to the bigger community, can you remember this situation where you felt like, okay, you were mature enough to have this feeling of impact with society? What is the situation that comes to your mind?
That's a tough one, Mark. At my age, it's probably very long ago. The first one comes to mind is when I was actually doing an introduction day for new students at educational technology at the University of Twente, where I studied. And you then welcome new students and parents that are high school students that are looking on what to do with my life. And then the students would then ask very practical questions, and the parents would like, they then ask questions, what do you like to be? And what do you like to do in your life and impact in your life? And I then said, I would like to work in developing countries, to use what I do in countries that don't have the means to develop the talents that we can in our Dutch society. And that was actually the first time that I heard myself say this, now living in South Africa.
What was the feeling that you had, that you that at this point of time you felt the importance of, there is something that I need to take relationship to and to define myself in a different way?
I think it's the question of, to what end do I use my abilities? What is it that I want to achieve by using it? And I think, and it's still something I struggle with, and I always struggled with in Kessler-Smith, and when people talk about profit, and profit being the purpose, or a degree being the purpose of studying. And I think that is just kind of a deep misunderstanding on what purpose really is. And I've heard an analogy that that resonated with me a lot in terms of business context, that we actually started looking at profit so much, and we then misunderstand that profit is not the goal, but it's the means. In much the same way that breath and breathing is crucial to live, but it's not the purpose of living. You don't live to breathe, but you breathe to live. And the same way that you look in companies, that people say, actually, I'm in a business because I want to make profit, then you're completely misguided, in my view. You need to make profit to stay alive as a business. Or I'm studying for a degree. And I've seen so many people, and sometimes very tragically, people having a degree after studying. Even in my own studies that also Susanna and others joined from Kessler-Smith, someone saying, I now have my degree, I have actually great results, I have graduated cum laude, but I don't know what I am able to do, don't know what to do with it. And now there's this big void, and some people then continue to study because they actually don't know what to do with it. And then we're missing a trick, and it's really about purpose and how you link your talents, your energy, to purpose.
To fill the void. We make a jump into time, a time warp to today. And the question I have is, like, again, I have this feeling and this picture of, is there a new void that you have? We're coming from a old normal. We today, in December 2020, have a very different situation. And if we just look into, again, this bigger picture, society, community, our feeling was maybe we won't go back to an old normal. There is a huge transformation underway. The first question is, like, do you share this? And what is now the void, or what is, like, do we also already see cracks in the wall that is allowing us to see beyond? So that's the idea. And the question today is, what is the situation that you feel that could be interesting to explore of this new normal?
Well, it's difficult to say what a new normal will be, but I'd like to turn your question around and saying, we actually hit a wall and we can look closer now. So we've looked very far and seeing the world as a big place, but we forgot what is close to our heart, what is close by. And I think what we're seeing is a reconnecting with what is close, which is, for instance, your family. In my situation, being far away from my son and my mother is difficult. And I used to be able to just buy a ticket and go. Revaluing those people that are close and meaningful to you and spending time with them. So that this whole work from home experiment that everyone was forced into brought people to spend time at home with their kids and juggling homeschooling and talk again to your partner and fight and figure things out because you couldn't run away to work. So work would be, and we've heard that many times, that work would be like a safe haven or somewhere to flee to if things are not going well at home. Well, you can't do that anymore. So you need to look at the things that are close, meaningful, and you cannot run away. So in that sense, having a wall close by forced us to really value and work with the things that are just around us. The other thing is about valuing, and I think that's a trend that was already happening, but valuing local. Where does our food come from? Is it really necessary to have a kiwi from Australia when you're living in Utrecht? Does that actually make sense? What is the cost of that? Environmentally, does it? So I think we'll see a whole change in online commerce. I really hope, because we're missing a big trick with that online commerce. And we're polluting, we are sending things up and down. This whole logistics part of online commerce is not solved. And we're missing the element of trust. Who do we buy from? Who grew our vegetables? Who created the clothing? In what conditions were they created? So I hope that it is an awareness to look closer and closer to our own behavior.
That I can relate to, and I do see the point that you're making hitting the wall. So it's not really breaking through to in any way continuing, but the point you make, like, okay, I have banged my head on the wall. Now I'm sitting down and trying to sort myself out. What do you think is the opportunity we have in reconnecting with society then in a different way, having this disruptive experience?
I think it's reconnecting with people around you. So if you can't travel, look at your neighbors. Look at who's in the street. Look at who's in your close circle. So that is, I think, one element. The other element is where do I spend my time on? The normal of going and going around and traveling on planes, buses, trains, cars. How much time people in our profession used to sit in a car or on a plane? And is that really valuable? Does that really add value? And then in an economical sense, and it's a widening of this one, is what are really the economical cost and the environmental cost of the way we've been living? And that is really needs deep reconsideration. I think I've heard, but that's years ago, but I'm sure still the same things happen, is that there would be shrimps coming from Norway. They would be then peeled and cleaned in Spain and then sold in Holland. because in Spain it's cheaper to clean the shrimps than in Norway. That's completely ridiculous. And I think looking at the ridiculousness of some of our systems, which we see as economical, but actually are uneconomical in a wider perspective of what is the cost to the world, what is the cost to the, it's really important. We've done in terms of costing and economical costing, we've actually put a very important cost outside of the brackets, which is transport costs. And I've used to tell this when I was working as a consultant in the Netherlands, I would be driving on the road and you would see all these contractors, construction workers, driving at 7 a.m. and 6 a.m. And you would see them from the east going to the west and people from the west and companies from the west going to the east, because their quote in the east was cheaper from the company and the other way around. We haven't saved any money. We've cost all these workers much time, 2 hours, and we just added transport costs. But we thought we had the cheapest solution while we're actually adding costs. So I think we need to rethink those economics fundamentally.
Yes, and that's fundamentally. On the other hand, maybe I would like to hint you into another topic. You are in South Africa. You make a lot of experience in the value of diversity and having a broader knowledge. And that might be a different perspective on concentrating on the local community. And I fully get the point that you make. If we chose that one, what do we lose if we have not access to this international sort of diversity, access to multi-perspectives, etc.?
In terms of not, we lose when we don't travel, you mean?
Well, I'm open to that one. So that's not the hint I make. I'm making a think of, we learn so much from different perspectives, and I'm not so much advocating traveling.
In that sense, if I speak from personal experience, living in South Africa is very enriching, and it makes you confront, because it's in your face. This morning you put the garbage out and you will see what they call the street surface. You see the people. They have these four wheels, like almost surfboards that they stand on, and they come to your garbage and select paper, select glass, select all the recycled ones, and they earn a little bit of money from that. So the contrasts are huge and big. And I think lots of our solutions are very much from a Western or more wealthy perspective. If you look at all the measures that we speak about lockdown, so go to any settlements. You don't have to go far. It's 5 kilometers from almost where everyone lives in South Africa. Everyone can go to a settlement in a very short distance. And you speak about lockdown and you speak about curfew of 10 o'clock in the evening. Well, if you live in a one-room shack with 7 people, how is that safe? And how is that even possible? Because you can only lie down with those people. You cannot be in the room even. So I think we're missing a big trick as society to look at real daily realities. And our realities are very much limited in each of you. So it is in that sense, I really fully support what you're saying, is that we need to just dive in, not only speak to them, but just immerse ourselves.
And to learn from different perspectives, and you don't know that you pretty much relate to our last guest on the podcast, that is not on air yet, but to learn from perspectives that are not in science and elsewhere, but to the ones who really have important information to us, but we need to understand where to look. We are already at the almost end of our 15 minutes. And if I would like to ask you to wrap up in a sentence or a thought or two, what is the essence of what we have to learn, how to connect with society? Knowing that that's a huge question for a short answer.
I think the main thread in what I'm saying is society is close by. Don't make it big, make it small.
Yeah, and relate. Thank you, Paul. I think we invite Chris and then Tina to give us a bit of resonance of what they heard. And I would like to start with Tina.
I have a new concept, as always. I'm always spontaneously changing everything. I would like to hear all of you, if you want to give us a, let's say, 45 seconds, not a minute, resonance. What have you heard? Suze, Eric, Pepijn, Chris and Ilan. Is that okay? I start with Chris.
I've heard this idea of local and to see the local, like the local becomes very clear right now. I tend to react in some way, so I will do that. And at the same time, we're in a times where climate change is the biggest burden on our, so the global and the big thing and the very small thing where we know limited to, I see a big paradox. That's actually what I've heard in the story. It's the paradox of living in a small context and this bigger story outside.
Thanks. Eric?
Well, in the same line as Chris said, what I really appreciated in Paul's view on things is that this lockdown locks us down physically and makes us think of ways of things that are even more important and urgent than this COVID crisis, which is, as Chris said, the world we live in. I think we will survive the generation, at least I'm in, but there are some generations behind us that will really have serious trouble. And again, just as Ilan said, the problem will be shifted to the not so upper class people more than to us. So that's another thing to think of.
Thank you, Eric. Pepijn.
I can very much relate to the example of the shrimps and the unlogical decisions we tend to make. And I think this is a time where the unlogical decisions come more and more to the surface. They become more and more visible. And I think it's also for us as professionals a time to make that visible and make that a point of discussion and see what's the next step in that, how we can do that differently.
Thanks. And Ilan?
For me, it's not surprising for those who know me already. It's like this concept of political hobbyism, which is researched by Eitan Hirsch. That's a really interesting thing because we were never as informed as nowadays, but never as inactive as we are. So there's many smart people like us talking about it, doing business with our knowledge, but not acting politically. And of course, that's not true for everyone, but as a general scheme of society, that is kind of true. And I wondered in this localism idea, how will we tackle something like climate change, where we need to speak to each other, need to hold each other accountable? So how this will look like in your perspective? And then the other thing, I wonder, what's concrete action to do besides talking about it?
Thank you. And Suze?
I enjoyed very much listening to Paul, and I wrote down all those quotes, and probably some of them will sink in later on. I really loved the metaphor of the wall that you used. You said, we've hit the wall, now we can look closer. And I really think there is an essence in that. So we were used to having a far horizon and now we've seen the edge. We need to focus on here and now and what we can do. And I don't know, I think that's very well put. And I'm not sure, I think it also has far reaching consequences and I'm not sure what and how, but I think this is, it also, it makes an appeal to us, or how do you say that? It asks us a question, so to say. And I really like that.
Thank you all for this short resonance round. We come to a little talk later on. And now I'd like to just hand over to Roberto and Chris.
Vielen Dank, Tina. Thank you very much. Chris, I like this question. When you look back of your life, In which moment did you feel the first time that you have impact on society with your habits, with your, you know, with your acting, and when and why?
My life is a bit shorter than that of Paul, but I go back a long time, at least 30 years. I have to think of a moment. It just comes now when I was. I must have been 5 or 6 years old, and I was walking with an aunt of my mother, and she was dropping just a paper on the floor. And my reaction as a little kid was, you can't do that. And she said, what? They will clean it anyway. And my reaction was, no, but if we all do this, then it's going to be a mess. So you need to take that paper and put it in the bin.
And somehow I think my parents must have repeated that story because it kept in my mind, and it must have been, or it was definitely one of the moments I was conscious about the impact of an individual on the bigger scale. So that, I think that's the first story I can remember on a very small scale.
Yes, thank you. And when you zoom into this, I would say, small situation, which talents or which facet of your personality that are still there today and with which you act and work today waren schon damals da?
I think the idea that as an individual you can make a difference by your own behavior. So it's quite an individualist idea somehow. But I've been raised in that kind of society where I always have beliefs, and I still do that I can make a difference as a person. And I need society, or I need communities around me, but my personal behavior, and I see that I've always looked for creating impact in small places, in a team. Now as a consultant, it's in small organizations. And that's where I get my fulfillment from, in the idea that this impact is a little seed and that will grow somehow.
And when we look at the situation in these days, you know, we are in December, Xmas is knocking on our doors. What do you say has changed in comparison to April, besides the temperature outside and stuff, but with the situation in our in the German society, you know, the part of the German society, you know, but maybe also in the Belgian society, you know.
I think the first thing I think about, and it's about this individual, this idea of being an individual and my autonomy, is I want to go on holidays. I want to travel, you know, somehow society says you can't. It's the first time in my life that I'm somehow cut off, that there's rules that limit my personal autonomy in a way that I've never experienced before. And even I will link it back to the Belgian society. We have a rule. I'm a single person, that I as a single person can only see one other person. So a knuffel contact, But it means that technically it's nearly impossible for me to respect, like for many other people in the surroundings. So somehow I'm trying to find a new comfort in trespassing the rules. And so many people around me are doing that because the rules are so strict, and to make you live your life still, to take responsibility for your own well-being, you're somehow forced to cross and to play with the rules, which is technically not okay. But that's what I see myself doing and what I see happening around me.
And in this year 2020, you moved from Brussels to Berlin, and so there were a lot of changes besides the Corona situation. What would you say are maybe the biggest changes that you see in your work, maybe in your perspective of society? Maybe in your perspective of you, of dich, of yourself.
Right, and I'm trying to understand your question in a sense that the difference between Belgium and Germany in this play as well.
Maybe you take the part of the question that resonates with you. Maybe it was a little bit too much in one question.
I can highlight one element that is on macro level, whereas I experience that. In Belgium, for example, and when it comes to Corona and the whole situation, I see that there is it's a small country which is very much inner focused. And there is, we at a certain point, we were the highest of Corona in the whole world. And then all of a sudden it became the eyes of the world on Belgium. That was the first time that it happened. And people, it somehow did something with the responsibility feeling of people, of feeling a community. In Germany, I experienced something completely different. And that's not only to do with Corona, but I feel that in the German society and in the public opinion, there is always an awareness, for example, that the way that Germany deals with Corona, the way that Germany deals with climate change is exemplary or has an influence on the rest of Europe, et cetera, and the rest of the world. And I even feel that the individual German that I meet, not the one living in the streets but the more political educated, maybe not active as in a way that Ilan says, people are aware of that. And so there is a different way of seeing yourself into the more global world. And that's something I feel very concretely with Corona, with climate change in a way. And so as a Belgian, there is always this little cocoon where we are in, and outside that, it's a different world. So.
Yes, okay, thank you. Now, maybe it's a mix of German and English. I will try. You said the first impact you realized when you were 5 or 6 years old, that you can make the difference. You can make a difference. Is this a feeling... ist das jetzt, wo du in zumindest die Hälfte des Jahres in Deutschland bist und in Berlin lebst, ist dieses Gefühl noch stärker geworden, dass also dein Agieren, dein Handeln einen größeren Impact hat? Oder ist das quasi, ist es für dich auch across all borders und das ist alles eh nur Konstruktion, ob ich jetzt nämlich als Belgier sehe oder als Deutscher, because I'm a human being?
But it's an interesting question, because I have built a network the last 10, 15 years professionally in the society, also in the city of Brussels, of people where a lot of my work is happening. By going to Germany, I'm basically a nobody. So actually, I feel my impact is the feeling of having impact is feeling less. So it's interesting perspective on what is impact and how do you build impact and what does it mean? What is perception and what is real impact somehow? The belief of taking the train instead of the plane and these kind of things is just personal convictions that I still keep going. But I would say, yes, it feels like I have to start anew when I'm in Berlin, in this sense. So it makes me more aware, and that's what traveling does. It's also why I believe traveling is not just going to disappear in times of digital, because it also functions as a way to create awareness about where we come from and what our impact is in this local society or local environments. So that's how I experience it right now, still very fresh in the experience.
Okay, wow. Yeah, normally I would go maybe a little bit deeper into this, new experience for you. On the other end, I have another topic, maybe a big topic, and we will see. Let's say communism doesn't work. Let's say capitalism doesn't work. What do you say? What could work for the next, let's say, 50 years? If you had a Bausatz, if you have some wishes, how would your painting or something like this look?
I think I will relate my story a bit with Paul, but I believe in the power of small communities. And in communities, I also see the power of like-minded people somehow to create and innovate together. But I think it's very important that between these communities, we make enough crossings. So people never belong to one community. I do neither. I'm part of the gay community, for example, which for many people is an unknown. But even within the gay communities, there's many small different communities. And it's not the only community where I'm part of, but it's significant for me. And I need this spaces to develop myself, to create identity, to feel strong. And from there, I can be active in other communities. And I believe we should invest in these and also in the crossings and so in the multiple identity or communities. And in this way, I think we can construct democracies and et cetera. That's for me the starting point where I believe and where I today see a lot of things happening, actually.
So let me see if I understand you. So I said in German, die Stärkung der Communities innerhalb der Community, dass darüber da auch einfach so ein Empowerment passiert in den Communities und dann die Vernetzung der unterschiedlichen Communities.
But I will give one little example.
Yes.
Because it's a dangerous thing what I'm going to say. But one of my best friends is a guy who has a very intense physical handicap. And he's been the whole school career from 8 to 18 years with me in the school. He seemed to be happy. But later on, and when he was in his 30s, he realized by meeting other people in the same condition that he actually missed being surrounded by people with a similar condition, because he could not create awareness about the fact that he is different. And by the idea that he was included in the same school, and we did all our best to include him, but he was always the special one, and he could not create awareness, abilities to deal and to find the power in his condition.
Because he was always the special one.
Because he was not in a place with other people like him, he couldn't. And it was a complete blind spot for me, because I believed in inclusion, and it opened up another way of looking to, you could say, multiculturality and all these perspectives. It's very complex, but it's interesting for me to not only see it as a inclusion and multiculturality, there is also power in the keeping certain communities and then opening up. That's what I want to add.
Chris, my last question to you is, when you look at Kessels and Smith, and you are part of Kessels and Smith since several years, what would you say and guess and maybe suggest which are the main topics or the main points for Kessels and Smith in 2021? Just, you know, don't think too much about it, because it's a very big question, but when you look at it right in this moment, what would you say this and that could be very important for us as Kessel and Smith in the next year?
I believe what we are able to do as consultants and facilitators is to help people, leaders, to be strong in the paradox, between digital and physical, between the being autonomous and being connected, being in the well-being part and in the tough part of isolation, etc. I think it's all in the global and the local at the same time. And I think it's in this paradox that we need people to help to deal and live with that and understand that. That's what I think we will be doing in very different forms in the next years.
Okay, and this starts that ourselves could das aushalten.
And I think the first work is that we have to do it ourselves. Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Chris.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your insights, your perspectives, your thoughts. And yeah, let's see what resonates in the group. And let's start with Tina. Yes, I will give to Tina.
Again, something different. We have 15 minutes left, and I would like to use all of them for this talk we would like to engender now in this little group, like a generative talk. And what does generative mean? It means that I won't be the one who is asking a lot of questions, but I would like to ask all of you what images pop up now and what kind of maybe metaphors are in yourself or have emerge in yourself while listening. And Suze were mentioning the keywords she was writing down, and I also wrote down a lot. And for me, to just start maybe, there was one question that was kind of a title. It is, does it make sense anymore? And it's like in your face that what we have lived in the past years is kind of sometimes mad and doesn't work any longer. Another thing is that this word of let's create awareness to look closer to our behavior and to look closer to our communities, to really get in contact with ourselves, with others, to also be able to face the paradoxes and to deal with it and to go into it and to work with it. And the third thing I think was the most powerful for me is this idea of, it's not about what they are doing, our society somehow are doing or not doing, but we are society. And what does that mean? Society is close by, Paul said. So what is the impact on our local environment, and also what is the purpose we would like all to have? That is what is coming to the surface for me. And I'd like to ask you, is there something, an image that is calling you, building up on that, or even going to the contrary to this picture?
I can bring a concept in from South Africa, which is the concept of Ubuntu. And Ubuntu merely means I am because you are. And it resonates with what Chris was speaking about, the individual and the community or the collective or the social. And if you look at the concept of Ubuntu in African context, and it has been almost embraced a lot by Europeans. People in Africa look at that with a little bit of suspicion, because we as European come from a place of real privilege. And we think that the privilege is in the past, but it's in the context. And I think that the paradox, the two questions we always have to ask ourselves and it linked to the concept of freedom that Chris was speaking about. What price am I prepared to pay to have a contribution to others? And we tend to take those two apart, saying, well, I need my freedom, so I'm traveling, but at what price to whom? Who do I leave behind? So there's a lot of debate current about freedom. You cannot take away my freedom. Well, how does my actions impact other actions? And if I bring it back to Ubuntu here, I think in many cases Ubuntu deteriorated, thinking like, because you have a job, you need to provide for me. We're using concept of reciprocity almost in and when it suits us. But the concept of sacrifice, what sacrifice do I make? What responsibility do I take to contribute to your life? I think those are the two questions you always ask yourself. And what Ilan said before about inactiveness, if you make the society small, you always act. The inactiveness doesn't exist. We make choices every day. So to think, but we need to look at how close is what we're saying matching to what we're doing? And do we really take the consequences of that? So for me, that is about bringing Ubuntu. Can we go back to Ubuntu and the real meaning of Ubuntu? Or do we use those principles when it suits us to explain or to justify our choices?
So is it a bit like really getting to know again and better and deeper what you call Ubuntu? And I was associating this with the categoric imperative of Kant. It's a bit the same idea. So how to relearn what this really is about.
And to be, I don't know the concept of Kant so well, so concrete, but also to be conscious of the meaning or the impact, and that relates to what Chris said, is also in the eyes of the others. So we get meaning through others and not as an individual by itself. So we are inherent. Our meaning is not given by ourselves, but actually by others.
Mm-hmm. Who can build on that? Are there other pictures coming? And Eric?
A bit building on what Paul said, but there was a part in your story, Chris, about the difference between Belgium and Germany. And Germany seeing itself through the eyes of others, wanting to be exemplary. And it brought up the concept of, I don't know the, here my French is better than my English, noblesse oblige, which is quite an elite way of thinking. But the nice thing about your story was the noblesse is not restricted to noble people. When you talked about yourself being in Berlin, and not having, maybe not having the impact you could have in Brussels, but still trying to lead by the way you do things. So it brought up that noblesse oblige being quite an elite way of thinking, maybe we're all noblemen and we can try to be so by setting some way of an example. And maybe we can look to ourselves through the eyes of others, just as Paul said. And in that way, be obliged.
Yeah, Mark.
That all resonates very much with me. And I think I will explore two principles that I learned that could really be interesting. Having this picture of Paul that you crashed against the wall, and we just need to reconnect with certain ideas. What is the level of cost, including societal and ecological cost, to the way of how we do business? So that's something that requires a different framework that we had already. And a second thing is this community is close by, but we need to connect communities. So there is something that is that seems to we seem to need to have need to do that in a different way. And both aspects I would like to explore because there's things to learn. It's not what we used to have, and I'm just curious what I have to learn to make that in a different way.
What other pictures, let's say metaphors, or what is your inner image that is coming now to you? What is a question arising? Ilan, you are looking very critical.
Yeah, I really wonder where this attraction comes from with this idea of getting local. Like we also heard Chris and homosexuality is maybe just one point, but this not living in small communities gives the freedom of individual expression a really huge room for personal development, for showing up as who you are. And like in every tribe, there were people just by the way how they were born were not accepted. And there was no idea of human rights or something like that, where we really progressed big time during the history. And I'm really great and grateful for that. And I really wonder how that should work when we start going back into tribes. So I'm really for an idea of globalism, and I'm really in an idea for, yeah, let's face that we run against a wall. I completely agree. But let's develop something new. Don't say we as a world need to go there, but let's just experiment and test stuff and see where we go. And let's give room to political action and not just to societal action. I would say political action is the one where we govern really ourselves, when we define the rules under which we live.
Let me add on that. And then Chris, you wanted to, Ilan, you said let's come to action and leave these political leave these tribes, but maybe we can also have a look at these paradoxes, because you also are talking about paradoxes. What is the best part of each paradox, and what comes out of seeing both of them, or even a third one will appear? Chris,
I just want to make the statement that it's for many people it's very unsafe in the global world. So people need their communities to create safe spaces to get into the world. And that's where the paradox is for me, but it's also where I believe, and I mean, Black Lives Matter movement, etc., have shown how important these movements and these communities are to bring ideas together outside and to make them big and make them on a societal level aware, create awareness. So that's how I see it.
100% agreement, just not going into a romantic idea of that there were times where it was better or anything like that.
I would like to give the last reflection to Paul and Chris. After having heard all of us, and we have asked you to give your perspective, your reflection and observation on what is going on now, how would you answer now, in this moment, to this question we were asking: what is actually pending now, Paul? Has it changed during the last hour?
I have an urgent need to share something that Joseph Kessler, our co-founder, always said, and it links the world to the local. He said, being part of Kessler-Schmidt community gives me the courage to go out and do things I would never dare to do otherwise. The last part of the combination brought that back very, very strongly. It is really bringing that sense of belonging, and I think that is the word that comes to mind, to belong somewhere, not to be tied by it, but to be have the safety, the belonging, and the courage to do the things that you can set out to do. And I think if we can leave with that idea, then we can leave with a great thought.
Thank you, Paul. And Chris?
Yeah, I want to build on that, because to bring it back, yes, I can say it made me more aware that actually that is what Kessler and Schmidt is doing for me. It's bringing a safe space to think big. And that's what I think we can reconfirm or make ourselves more aware that it's so important that we do this, make this safe space in order for all of us together and individually do great things. Because it's necessary.
Thank you very, very, very much, Chris and Paul, and all of you who have joined us for this little hour. Mark, you are dancing us out now.
Out of the show. And a big thank you to all of you, Paul, Chris, Tina, Roberto, also to Marike, Ilan, Kalin, Eric, Pepin, and Suess. That was a glimpse of perspectives on an important question, and I think a warm thank you and a warm understanding of Kessels and Smith. If you like this show, please tune in again. It's only the start of a debate. We are sure we are not there yet, but that is a first choice of perspectives. So join in, and that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.